Hey friends, mark your calendars. The Intentional Motherhood Retreat is coming up October 23rd through 25th in Portland, Oregon. It's a meaningful few days to slow down, connect, and refocus on what matters most in your motherhood journey. Also, some exciting news, Intentional Fatherhood has officially launched on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. So go subscribe, check out the first few episodes, and share it with all the fathers in your life. For more details and registration info for the Motherhood Retreat, you can go to intentionalparents.org, or you can go check out our new website for fathers, intentionalfatherhood.org.
We have an invitation for you. We want to invite you to the first ever Intentional Motherhood Retreat. We want to invite you to join us for a three-day retreat of being given to. We know and live the beautiful challenge of motherhood. We know the feelings of aloneness, of inadequacy, of fear, of weariness that so often weigh us down in the midst of all it means to be a mother. We've designed this retreat with your needs in mind. Your need for connection with like-minded women, your need for gentleness of spiritual formation, and ultimately your need to be strengthened for the task of motherhood.
How long has it been since someone, anyone really, poured into you? We know the answer. Too long, if ever. As a mom, you give and give and give until there's nothing left. So come to where we live in Bend, Oregon, a place of startling beauty, a place to come away from it all. Come with your best friend, your sister, your mom, come together, or come alone. It was Dallas Willard who said, if you don't come apart for a while, you'll come apart after a while.
So come apart with us for a while. Join us October 5th through 7th here in Bend, Oregon. All the details are in the show notes.
Welcome to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Intentional exists to help parents in their God-given task to raise passionate Jesus followers. We exist to bring hope, help, and healing to families. Each week, we will talk about anything from parenting, marriage, lifestyle, and what it looks like to follow Jesus in our time. Intentional is made up of Phil and Diane Comer and Brooke and Elizabeth Moser. I am Brooke, and the funny thing is, we are all family. Elizabeth is Phil and Diane's daughter, so we're a family figuring this thing out together. We hope this podcast feels like you're sitting with us in our home talking about how to do this thing called life together. Elizabeth and I are your hosts. Let's get into this week's podcast. Welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. I'm introducing everyone today because I found out when I listened to your episode, Elizabeth, that you hate doing introductions. Mm-hmm. I was just wondering if you wanted to do one today.
No, it's all you.
Oh, thank you.
Go for it. I'll let you.
So happy that we're all here today. Phil and Diane, Elizabeth and I are here, and we are going to be answering your questions, Q&R. Mm-hmm. And we say Q&R, but we've had a couple of people ask, why do you say Q&R? Let me just explain really quick. We say Q&R for a very specific reason, because you have a lot of questions that a lot of people do Q&As and question and answer. We do question, and the R stands for response, because we can respond to anything, but we can't always answer everything. So what we're going to do is respond to your questions based upon our some experience and lack of experience, but we will do our best to get through some of that. And just wanted to say thank you to everybody who has rated and subscribed and left a comment on the podcast. If you haven't been able to do that, would you just pause right now and whatever platform you're listening to this on, whether Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other, would you just rate the podcast and even leave a comment and think about subscribing, because anytime that we put new content out, you know about it. And also, lastly, if you'd like to receive daily text messages on devotionals around marriage and parenting, would you feel free to look in the show notes? You can click a link there, sign up really easily. That's just a resource. Take advantage of that if you'd like. let's get in these questions. The best part about this is that none of you know the questions.
No,
we don't. But I have all of this very limited power.
Yeah. And I just want you to know, I really don't like that.
I know you don't.
I like you, but I don't like that.
I know you don't. It's funny though, because we have all of these conversations when we're talking about questions, and we almost answer the questions when we're talking about the question. Mm-hmm. So a long time ago, I was like, we should just record these and not even ask. So let me start with an easy one, or one that is not super deep, but I think would actually be helpful to just address or respond to. How do you pray over your children? Hmm. Now, I think there's a simple answer, but I do think there is a nuance there. How do you pray over your children? Not for your children, but over your children. I do have some thoughts, but does anyone have something that they'd like to add first? Diane, your turn.
I would want to maybe say, as you're praying over your children, which I'm assuming by this we're meaning out loud over our kids. You know, we're sure. actually bringing them to the Father in the moment. And the number one thing I would say is be very careful what you edit yourself. You know, be careful what you say.
Do edit yourself? You're saying do
edit yourself. Okay. Like, you can speak freely when you're on a prayer walk and you're praying for your daughter who just had a massive meltdown because you corrected her and you're all worried about her. And so you're just opening up your heart to God and you're pouring it out like David did, very unedited. God is listening. Only God is listening. But when you're praying over your children, it's very wise for you to understand that your child is listening as you talk to God. And so you need to be very careful. Never use prayer as manipulation.
Yeah, that's
never
good.
Lecture in prayer. Just honestly, I think when we're praying for our children, we're standing beside them with compassion and not judgment. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of helping them into, you know, Hebrews kind of gives you a picture of a throne room. And I like to picture crawling up on the Father's lap, who is the King of the universe, and he's sitting on his throne, but he's inviting us mm-hmm. actually to come so near that we're like a little girl crawling up into the King or our Father's lap. Yeah. And that's what we're trying to set the tone of. When we pray over our children, we're trying to set that tone.
Sure.
That they don't see God as cold and distant, but they see him as welcoming, even when we're bringing our failures to
yeah.
him.
And if you're a dad, maybe you're not a little girl crawling into the Father's lap.
That's
you're chopping down a tree with Jesus or something.
Yeah.
Could you give us maybe just even just 2 seconds more on this though, of what that would look like? So I love that concept,
yeah.
and I think okay. that's really good, but like, how would you do that?
I think the first thing you do is you thank God very specifically for this child. So the child is with you. You are in the presence of God, and you are thanking God for specific things that are beautiful in that child. Mm-hmm. To me, that is yeah. you're just echoing God's heart for the child. But you're also showing the child that you know that God adores this about them. Hmm. So maybe if I'm praying with Scarlett over Scarlett, I'm just thanking God for her courage in going to family camp without any friends. That's what she did last year. She yeah. was willing to go. She didn't know anybody. We went to Southern Got California it, yeah. and we invited her to go. And so maybe in that case, knowing she's terrified, in all yep. honesty, you're thanking God that she still has the courage to say yes to something that I particularly would never have said yes to as a little sure. girl. I would have given in to my fear. So that kind of thing.
Got
it's
it.
Almost like a blessing. You're mm-hmm. you're blessing her before God.
Yeah.
And you're also asking things from God for her.
Sure.
You know, for a special friend that week.
Yeah.
Lord, give her eyes to see who might become a special friend this week. Mm.
I love that. That's helpful. One of the things I know I do is at night is when I'm checking the kids, you know, I don't know if this is every dad's undefined role, but it mm-hmm. seems to be, at least, especially if you're not if you're the father and you're the last one in bed kind of thing, but going through the house, making sure everything's mm-hmm. turned off. And then mm-hmm. if it's one of those nights where everyone decided to actually go to sleep a little bit earlier, Love those nights, by the way. Just like last night was one of those moments. I was just checking on Duke's door was kind of open, so I went in there, and he's a full teenager now, so he just sleeps so hard. He's just sleeping so hard. Mm-hmm. So he just sprawled out, and you know, I just thought about thanking God for him and praying for him. So mm-hmm. you know, just even taking a second in the quiet of the night, in the dark of the night. Well, there was a little light on, but just praying over him and blessing him, and then stepping into the girls' room, and all of it's just quiet, and they're all sleeping and praying over Scarlett and Birdie and Sloan. Just a couple of specific things. They're never long, but just things that I hope for them in the future, and simple things like they're sleeping well and all that stuff. So that's one. That's another way to do it too.
Well, and there's another way to do it.
Give me an.
But you're talking about intercessory prayer,
sure.
Yes.
And then this question is praying over, and you rightly assume that means out loud over the kids. So that, and those are two different things. And I really appreciate your insight, Di. And then I love that you do that. And you made me think of when we before we'd written anything for Intentional.
Yeah.
We heard about a pastor in Ohio.
Oh, yeah.
Who had raised 9 kids who were all walking with God.
Okay.
And so a friend of ours said, you should go talk to him. I go, any guy who raised 9 kids and all walking with God, I'll go to the ends of the earth for that. Okay. So we flew to Ohio. We made an appointment with him. He was a retired pastor. We still had an office, and he would still taught. His son was the pastor. His son was in his early 50s. And so I had my notebook out. His name was Donald. And I said, okay, so we've been asked to put together a parenting conference. And so about raising passionate Jesus followers, you did it. And there's some were pastors, some were missionaries, some were business people.
Yeah.
What did you do? And it was hilarious because he said, well, every night I went into each of the kids' rooms and I would pray over them. So I wrote down pray over your kids. Okay, what else did you do? He goes, well, when my wife and I were driving to the grocery store, we would often just hold hands and we would pray for our kids. So I said, okay, I already got that. What else did you do? And I could not get anything out of him. Every answer was a form of prayer. Mm. And so I finally, inside, I was kind of frustrated. And I thought afterwards, no, I think God sent me all the way to Ohio to hear that the most powerful thing you can do for your kids is pray for them.
Yep.
Wow. So pray over them.
Good reminder.
So, and I can't remember all the other things he said, but they were all just prayer, 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 prayer. The other thing I was going to say, though, is pray scripture over them.
Yeah,
yes.
Me too.
So, and you know, whatever that scripture might be. I mean, obviously, I prayed immediately that our kids would be saved. Mm-hmm. You know, God so loved the world that he first quote verse I ever quoted in the room when Jamark was there, just born, I sang songs to him. Amazing grace, how great thou art. And I quoted John 3:16 and some other verses, and you know, immediately prayed that they would, you know, get be saved and love the Lord. But like, I just opened up to one of my favorite verses, 2 Chronicles 16:9, the eyes of the Lord move to and fro throughout the earth that he may strongly support those whose heart is completely his. Mm-hmm. So if I was praying that over, you know, one of my kids, I'd use their, maybe you'd use their name. Look, I just pray that Scarlett will be one whose heart is completely yours. And Lord, I want my heart to be completely yours too. So it's not like you're the great guru praying this over him, like you're praying for yourself too. So I just think there's power in praying scripture over your kids.
Love it.
I'm all the way with that one because Ephesians chapter 1 and chapter 3 have been, I had written those out on 3x5 cards and prayed through certain stages of my kids' spiritual development as I, knowing that I couldn't really have a word into their life at that time, that this was a work of the Spirit.
Yeah.
So it would be like in Ephesians 1:18, I pray that your hearts will be flooded with light so that you can understand the wonderful future he has promised to those he called.
That's great.
I want you to realize what a rich and glorious inheritance he has given to his people. I pray that you will begin to understand the incredible greatness of his power for us who believe, and on and on. I mean, that's how Paul prayed for the Ephesians.
I love that.
Who he loved, and they were like his children. Mm. And I think we pray that for our adult kids, and we pray that for our grandkids. But these are also certain things we pray really as we're watching, you know, we raise our kids to love and follow Jesus, but there's a point where you're handing their faith responsibility off to them, and you you have less to say because now it's up to them to be developing their walk with God.
Less
and that's
say.
When this is.
Yes.
Less to say and more to pray.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, let's go to the next one. That's really good.
You are enjoying content brought to you by Intentional, a crowdfunded nonprofit that desires to help families and marriages all around the world in the area of discipleship and spiritual formation. This offering is completely free, thanks to the generosity of our growing community of Legacy Builders. Legacy Builders is a group of people from all around the world that give monthly to fuel this dream that we have in our hearts of seeing discipleship to Jesus in the family become a way of life. A monthly gift of $5, $10, or even $30 can continue to fuel this ministry forward. Our dream is to invite people like you to join and partner with us at a financial level and see this work integrated into families. So as you listen to this podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us? Would you allow the Spirit to lead you, even if it's just to a few dollars a month? Thank you so much, and may the Spirit of Jesus give you wisdom, clarity, and joy as you pray about joining us. And if you want to join today, go to intentionalparents.org and click on Give.
Okay, this is actually a fun one. I know Elizabeth and I are right in this stage. Parenting the transition from kids to teens. Yes, and how to give more autonomy in this culture. And this is, I mean, let me just say thank you to the person who wrote this question, because you're putting your finger on something that's very tricky right now.
Yeah,
it's a very unique time. And what we find is what you decide here often affects what kind of relationships your kids are going to have. And we keep finding that we've made a certain handful of decisions, and that has opened up a way of thinking for our children, which is interesting. And I'm going to let Elizabeth jump in on this, because I know you have a lot of really, really great thoughts. But just to say that that has really, the backlash to this, like whatever decision you make, you just have to understand you're actually, it's a unique time where it's not like all kids just want to hang out. Like it's a whole different thing right now. For lots of different reasons, which we don't need to get into fully. But honey, what are your thoughts on this? What are your first thoughts?
Oh man.
I have some thoughts too, but yeah, just go.
So we have two kids who are, one who is a teenager and one who is getting close to being a teenager. So 11, and by the time this comes out, Duke will be 14. This is by far my favorite stage.
Yes.
So I got excited when I saw this question, because I'm like, this is so much fun. Like, this doesn't have to be like drudgery, like so many people talk about it.
Yep.
Man, where to go with all of my thoughts? I think it's such an important stage.
Yes. It really
and
is.
I think that it's parenting moves from being a little more structured and I don't know, maybe this is a bad way to phrase it, but a little more rules and obedience focused, which there's a little more of that focus when you have a two-year-old who's going to run out in the middle of the street and, you know, where you're teaching boundaries and rules, and it moves to being much more relational. So I think that right there in and of itself of recognizing you are moving to a very relational, time-consuming in conversation way of parenting. But I think it's this odd balance that you have to strike where you're still their authority and you're still their parent. You're not trying to be their best friend, while also being somebody that they can talk to, that you can reflect back to them what they're feeling, that they feel seen and heard and known by you.
Yeah.
Both become really important, and you can't lean all the way in. I'm not going to be the parent authority figure. I'm just going to be the friend. And you definitely can't just lay down the authority and tell them what they should think or feel, because they will want nothing to do with telling you about what they think or feel. I think just a resource that's been incredibly helpful to us is actually a book called Seen.
Oh, that's good.
I can't remember the author's names.
We can
but
put it
just,
in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes. It was written by a longtime youth pastor and a therapist. And they talk a lot about teens who are experiencing depression and anxiety, but I feel like everything they say applies to if your child overtly struggles with that or covertly struggles, because they all struggle.
Is there a teenager who's not struggling
with that? Yeah. Yeah. And it's a very short read. It's like a less than 4-hour audiobook. If you listen to it, they do have an audio version. But I think that is like really necessary for our time in parenting kids, not just teenagers, but really like the 10 years old and above, I would say. But man, I think it's a time where we just have to ask God for so much wisdom, and you have to know your kids because there's no one way to transition a 10-year-old to being a teenager. Like, they're all going to need different things. And so right now with our daughter, it's like a lot. She needs a lot of me. Mm-hmm. And a lot of me sitting with her, helping her understand how she feels, and helping her understand herself
in a healthy way.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas our son, I would say it's very different. He's like very emotionally mature.
Yeah.
And so they're just different conversations. He doesn't need quite as much of me helping him untangle his feelings. But when he's ready to talk, I need to be willing to drop everything. Yeah. And listen to him talk.
Wait. Yes. Wait. This is a great example.
So true.
Let me just give a for instance. So we were driving. His good friend's birthday is this week, and he wanted to get him a particular present. And Elizabeth, Duke and I were on a trip. And so Elizabeth wanted to talk to him. So I gave Duke the phone. I said, hey, you need to call mom. She's wanting to talk to you about getting this present. She's going to help get the present. So could you talk to her? Going back and forth. And he said this particular present he wanted to get, and I think Elizabeth probably deemed it unpractical, silly, or just not something wanted.
I was researching on the phone with him.
It was more. It was more money, and there was a handful of reasons why it was
okay.
Like,
it was bright pink Crocs.
Yeah,
he wanted for his best friend because they have an inside joke about this.
Yeah, so he wanted to get him an inside joke present, but the friend actually wants the Crocs too. So it's this weird thing, and so this is what's going on, and he's at the age where inside jokes like. He's like, I'll spend a lot of money on an inside joke, sure. And so we're driving home again, and then Elizabeth says, hey, I'm going to be going to this toy store. Can you tell me, can you have Duke talk to me because I'm going to pick something up? I said, Duke, I think mom wants to talk to you about the toy store thing. He's like, oh, she's just not listening to me. She's doing that thing where she says she's listening, and I told her exactly what I wanted, and I told her I would pay the difference, and she's just not listening to me. And I said, I actually think you're right. So then I texted her back. By the way, I was texting you back when I got pulled over for running a yellow light.
I got pulled over.
I didn't say this. So I get pulled over for running because I didn't want to slam on my brakes. So I go through the light and I get pulled.
You just happened to be texting while you were driving.
No, I wasn't texting while
driving.
We
were on the phone. We were talking.
I had AirBuds in. And AirPods in, and I was being completely safe while driving. I didn't want to slam on my brakes. I actually wasn't doing anything crazy, and I was
going the speed limit. Of course not.
It's never my fault.
Tell them how much that cost you.
$265.
A lot more than pink Crocs.
Yeah. So I'm sitting there, and while she's like, and so this officer, she takes my stuff, and I was like, oh, you know, yellow lights. You know, I didn't want to slam on my brakes. I didn't know I was breaking the law. She's like, yeah, yellow means stop. And I was like, well, I was right on the line. I didn't want to slam on my brakes.
Red meant stop.
Yeah. So anyway, it was a teaching moment. So she's running my papers. Duke's telling me mom's not listening. So I'm texting. And then we're talking about the police officer thing. I'm like, yeah, this is a judgment call thing. Like, it's my judgment was I didn't want to slam on my brakes. Her judgment is like, I'm trying to protect the law. And this is what happens. She's the law. She wins. So anyway, that's a tangent. But Duke was really clear about, like, he knew exactly what was going on. He's like, I know this dynamic. I know what she's making me feel, and I'm wanting to do this. And of course, like, Elizabeth wasn't wrong by saying that's kind of a silly thing to spend money on. And and he also wasn't wrong to want to do, you know, he's at that stage now. But I would just say that's a good example, maybe, to go, like, I think there's those weird moments of tension where it's like, oh yeah, we would rather just do the thing where it's easier. Let's go to the toy store and do what we've always done. But we have to kind of stretch into this, like, oh, you want to spend like $30 of your money on a joke? Like, like, are we okay with that? Yeah. Like, and you know, obviously Elizabeth and I have to figure that out, but we also decided, like, it's a new stage. It's a whole new time.
Yeah.
And so that's a silly, not even probably very helpful example.
No, but it is
because they add up.
Because it was a really good moment of,
So the, for example, the Crocs were $50. And I said, okay, I wasn't planning on spending more than 30. That's what we spend on, like, he's your really good friend. That's a generous birthday present. So we had to have this conversation where I had to listen to him of how bad he wanted really this. I had to be thinking, am I okay with him spending his really hard earned, like he's doing a bunch of yard work this summer. Mm-hmm. He's trying to save money, you know, but really listen to, okay, he has a moment of wanting to be generous and wanting to like, this would be really fun to him. Like there's so many layers to that, that it's not as black and white as telling a 2-year-old, no, you can't have a snack.
Exactly.
And the minute we try to make it that way, they will begin to push us away. It doesn't mean you say yes to every, I didn't spend a penny more than $30. I said, I will put the $30 towards the Crocs, but you have to pay the difference, you know? Yeah. But I think the question of like autonomy in our current
I wanted to address that too.
Culture. You know, again, I feel like it's knowing your kids and being involved enough in their lives and involved enough in their friends' lives. Brooke and I have been in this unique stage of having two younger kids and two older kids and recognizing they want a social life, which means we
our older kids.
Yeah. When our kids were little, if the kids wanted to have a play date, it's because we wanted to hang out with our friends. Like, oh, great, we'll hang out with the parents. You kids happen to get along. Yes, we can do a play date. But as they get older, we started to realize, oh, we have to be more social than we actually would like to be right now, because who our kids spend time with.
I think you need to speak for yourself. I think these are different. We have different needs.
I have to be more social. Yeah, than I was going to say,
I don't mind being social. That doesn't, it's not a, it's not as heavy for me maybe as it is for you, because you have different needs and that's okay.
Yeah.
But you're right. Like it's stretching you into having to do, be more social at times when what you need is time by yourself to recharge and to refresh. And there's nothing wrong with that. Introversion, extroversion. But I do agree. Like, yeah, there's, you can keep going on your thought. I just wanted to say it is. It also plays on me because it's not like we're antisocial at all. What we do, even with intentional, we're around people all the time and we love people. We love interacting with people. But there's those moments just like anyone where you need space. But the autonomy thing, and Phil, you have something after this, but
just a thought listening to you talk.
So the autonomy thing, I just want to say one thing. I think that if you have a good relationship with your kids, operating in from the kid to teen stage, if you can operate with respect and trust towards your kids as a default. Now, your kids are not always going to be worthy of respect, meaning they're not going to act in a way that you'd be like, I should respect that. Mm-hmm. And they're not always going to be trustworthy. They're going to miss it. But I would just say there's those two things change the whole tone of my relationship with both of my older kids. Mm-hmm. The moment I assume Duke to be a trustworthy man, and the moment I assume respectfulness. Now, I might find out otherwise because I'm close enough to know the difference if he was being truthful or respectful. Those two things are incredibly different with setting the tone of that weird dance when you move from them being kids to where you're their authority fully to this new time when it's like, it's nuanced. Like so many of the decisions we make with our kids right now are nuanced. Doesn't mean we don't draw the hard line of no, but like the pink Crocs is a great example. It's like, okay, we have to now nuance this.
Yeah.
And how do we like do that now? And I think if you can slow down and just begin to be open to the fact that it might be a little different. And I seem to be more of a nuancer in general. And I think you're probably more, this is how we do it. And so what normally happens, this is just our dynamic. Elizabeth usually is like, okay, this is the foundational thing that we want to make sure that we're doing. This is the truth. And then it's usually me coming in going, okay, is that something that we need to hold together? Do I need to support you in that? Or is this something that we can like actually change our mind about or think differently about? And then, you know, sometimes we agree, no, we need to stay firm on this. And then a lot of the, you know, other times Elizabeth's really free to just go, yeah, I think, you know, maybe I am just kind of thinking more linear or black and white on this and we can nuance it more. So that's just been our experience. What is your thought? You have a thought.
Oh, I've been loving this conversation. Oh, you're just making me think of this is a very good thing that just happened.
Yeah.
That should really help parents in a practical way of what we actually teach, where we say parenting is not an exact science.
No.
Okay. And no. Diane's phrase, we parent out of relationship.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the whole thing that Diane, you've written on the power of appeal that we've. Mm-hmm. So I know Duke well enough that if you had said, no, you are not going to spend $20 because yes. I know that you also, you only have $60 and I know that you need that next month. He would have honored that decision. But because he's that kind of man of character, you gave weight to his, you know, ridiculous desire because there's no verse about pink Crocs. So you can't go.
I haven't found it yet.
But you were thinking about generosity. You were thinking about stewardship. You're thinking about him. And sometimes let's just say yes. There's a time for a parent to say, let's just do it.
You're right.
You know, there's and there's a time to say no. And so I just think that this, you guys handled that so well. And the other thought that occurred to me is, I don't know where this hit me. I don't know. After we read all the stuff on parenting, you know, God's always speaking, but it hit me. If your son or daughter has received Christ as Savior, there's two relationships going on. You're still the parent, and they're commanded to honor you, and they're still your son or daughter, and you're commanded not to provoke them to anger, but they're also your brother or sister in Christ. So when they're teenagers, that's really, you're talking to a young man of God who reads his Bible, and so there's that relationship too. So you have the parent-child relationship, you have the brother-sister relationship, and it's so different than a two-year-old where you're saying, no, you can't do that, and this is what's going to happen if you disobey me. You know, it's like...
But that's so, that what you're saying, like how it looks for me practically, I'll just give you a good, for instance, of the other day, it was Duke was particularly having an off day and he was pretty irritated with anybody's existence and the fact that anybody would dare be alive on this planet, especially those that live in his same household. And so there's just kind of like little bumps, you know, nothing crazy, but just little irritation moments of him towards each sibling that he had. And so I like corrected him for it. I was like, dude, just stop. If you need space, that's fine, but just stop being rude. It's okay. Just don't be rude. And said it nice, said it really calm, said it 3-4 times. And I was, and then another event, one of the girls come in and he told me to go away and he's being rude. And I was like, oh my goodness. Like we just had this talk. So I go out into the garage where he was and I had to firmly rebuke him. I was like, this is not okay. What you're doing is not okay. Your attitude's not okay. And you're being a grump to everybody around. Like, you need to stop. And if you choose to not listen to me this round, we'll move to the next one where there's consequences. I don't want you to have consequences.
Yeah.
At the same time, you need to stop. And I was really firm and I was so irritated and fed up at that point. And so I did it more rough than I would have wanted to. And so he got it. He's like, you know, he understood that I was serious. So how it looked is I had to get firm and remind him. I had to be parental over him, you know, really firm, direct, no room for error.
I had to rebuke him.
I had to say, this isn't cool. And you're not allowed to do this. And you need to stop because it's not good for you or for other people. At the same time, about 5-10 minutes later, I had to come and apologize and say, you know, I understand that I was really rough and I respect you and I see that you're having a hard day. So I'm asking you to do this because it's the right thing to do for other people. At the same time, I just need you to know that I do love you. I still respect you, even though that I had to rebuke you. And so, and then he goes, yeah, Dad, I know. I'm kind of being grumpy to everybody. So it's that kind of tension, this weird dance where I should have felt, I know a lot of parents feel like, well, they should have done that. I don't need to apologize. And I would say that's primarily how I grew up. But I have just found the moment I can come and soften take responsibility for what my part is, for maybe not being as kind as I could. It just creates this wonderful closeness that we didn't have before or couldn't have otherwise. We have a new offering for you. If you would like to receive daily or weekly text messages and encouragement around parenting, marriage, with prayers and scriptures, click the link in the show notes and we would love to send those to you. Can't wait to connect more with you.
You know, that's what we talk about when we discovered when we were doing our study for the original intentional parenting teaching, and which, you know, we're really now is kind of foundational and that we build on, is the difference between discipline and punishment. Yeah. And I feel like that becomes really important in the teenage years, that discipline is training your child. Like, often in the teenage years, the most effective training we do is, okay, Duke, you did it this way. Here's how you could have done it. Mm. And it would have been, you know, more satisfying for you with the same results. You know, that's that training. And I think kids who don't get trained like that really can batter people relationally, you know, because nobody's calling them on it. So, you know, here's what you guys do, Brooke and Elizabeth. You call Duke on those attitudes, which is calling him up to, he does have the self-control and the ability to contain his irritability and his moodiness.
Yeah.
And so,
or to move
the
it
parents
on.
Are just, move, yeah. What I see a lot in parents is just they roll their eyes disrespectfully, yeah. I might add, behind their teenagers' backs.
Yeah, just go.
And
ugh.
They shrug their shoulders and they make some sort of gnarly little pokey comment about their kids, which is only causing animosity between them. Whereas yeah. if they're willing to jump in and say, okay, so like you, Brooke, that example is so beautiful because you not only did rebuke him, show him a better way, but then you came back and apologized for using the very method he was using in order to get him to stop. You know,
I know. I mean,
and but yeah. but had you said yeah. nothing, he sees the hypocrisy of that.
Yeah.
I mean, he teenagers are so sharp about
yeah.
manipulation or hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just see stuff. They don't sugarcoat it. For you to yeah. come back and apologize is probably the most powerful thing you did that day because mm. it's also teaching Duke that he needs to go and apologize to his sisters without you saying, say you're sorry.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, genuinely understand what he was needing at that moment was probably something like some space from
sure.
their constant noise and messes and,
yep.
you know, just
his needs are very
Duke.
Specific. Yeah, he
yeah.
knows his needs.
So I think we just need to remember that. Punishment, on the other hand, is you get what you deserve. And that's what I think parents automatically, I mean, all of us parents have done it. We go to the punishment with our teenagers because we think that they have to have consequences for everything.
Yeah.
And all I can say is that's really a backwards way of teaching about the grace of God.
Yeah.
But God becomes so inviting when we show he is a God of grace that mm-hmm. we can come to him in our worst moments and he doesn't turn us away
yeah.
and he doesn't say, sharpen up. You know,
mm-hmm.
if you want to come and talk to me about that need first, you're going to need to, you know, get it together. It's
yes.
just, and so we don't want to give that kind of punishing vibe off to our mm-hmm. kids.
Yeah.
Instead, compassionately, yes, consequences sometimes, compassionate consequences that have actually have something to do with whatever you're dealing with. Not just out of the blue, I'm mad at you, so you deserve, you know,
yes,
this terrible punishment.
I think that's really
and yet
good.
I understand it and I did it
yes.
too many times, but I think if we can just begin to train our own selves to say, listen, I am representing God here and I want my children to come to him in their worst moments and their biggest mess ups and their biggest failures. So I'm going to have a little different demeanor. And
yes.
But at the same time, never back off. You don't stop parenting your kids.
No.
I hate these terms that have made parents almost like retreat and shame, like helicopter parenting. And I understand its definition, but it makes it sound like any parent who ever says no to their child is harming them or doing something bad.
Yes.
But when we first started our church, Solid Rock, I spent many hours listening to girls in the prayer room, young women, many of whom came from wonderful Christian homes, many of whom said to me, I wish my parents had said no.
Yeah.
Why didn't my parents say no? And they found themselves in situations that were above their heads, and they will bear the scars of some of those for the rest of their lives.
I was just going to say that where my mind was going to of I also feel like we need to help empower parents to be willing to be the bad guy. And I'm thinking specifically with technology and with, you know, what technology we will do as a family and how we're going to handle phones and all of that kind of stuff. But also knowing that when we're sending them to a friend's house or to, you know, a group hangout, or like, we have to be aware and not bury our heads in the sand, not to communicate. It's this balance of not to communicate and I don't trust you. Right. But the reality is I actually really trust my kids. I don't trust the internet and all and other and kids.
You don't always trust it. Other parents.
Exactly. And we have to be willing to be informed, to have awkward, uncomfortable conversations with their kids' friends. We have to be willing for our kids to be upset with us and not understand. Yeah. Now, obviously, parents can take what I just said and just make everything a hard no and a rule and a, you know, we have this ideals that we set and, you know, I'm not saying that. But I do think that we have to be willing to be uncomfortable ourselves, for our kids to be upset with us, to
because you're guarding your
kids. Yeah, yeah. And I think, as you, I think it was you said it, Dad, like there is no formula. There's no like, this is how you slowly release your child to independence. Right. Like it's a moment by moment asking God for wisdom, praying constantly. Yeah. You know, I realized the other day, Duke has been blessed with just a couple like really good friends who are like good kids. Like I couldn't have hoped for better teenage friends.
Yeah.
And we've been like struggling to find that a little bit with Scarlett. And I realized, gosh, I need to start praying about this.
Yes.
Pray that God would bring her the same types of friends that Duke has. Yes. He has just this kind of group of a few of them. They're all right now actually floating the river for one of the, for River, the kid who's getting the pink Crocs. They're all floating the river right now. Yeah. And but I just realized, gosh, like God did that. We didn't like facilitate happen.
But we remember the same deal. Duke didn't have that. We started praying for it.
But it's made me realize I want to pray that for Scarlett. Yes. Like I desperately want her to have a group of girls like that.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's also got me thinking of, wow, what are we going to do when some friends come in the picture who that's not the case, which we've had a little bit. But anyway, it just reminded me to pray.
This is an overlapping. This is an overlapping thing of what you're talking about. You know, all the different things they need. And we've found the chasm of deciding to be more reserved, not ignorant, not putting our heads in the sand, but more reserved when it comes to phones, and having a Gab phone is not a, you know, it's a smart-ish phone. I call it a dumb-ish phone.
Yeah.
Has a lot of, but you know, like when, I mean, our kids forget to take the phone with them because they're not used to being addicted to a phone. Mm-hmm. So when your kids have phones that they have all this access to and apps to, you know, they're constantly on it to the point of where they're missing the moment. And whether you have talked yourself out of that, or you're the parent that said, well, that's just our culture and time. No. That is literally in the last like 5 to 10 years that's our time, but nobody, and everybody that's done all the research, nobody says that that's a good thing. So we have to remember that you don't want to keep your head in the sand about technology at all, but you're the parent. You have to pace your kids. You got to walk them at the pace of their development, and you can't just give them everything in a moment because that's what the culture is saying. And I think that's as parents, like a lot of that kind of stuff has gone out the windows. And the main thing I hear from parents is, well, you know, it's just kind of, it's our time. It's what we're doing. We don't want to be ignorant. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, this isn't about ignorance. This is about being wise. But what that has ended up doing unintentionally is when I look at who Duke's closest friends are, or Scarlett's, they share, they're with families. Yeah. And this hasn't been on purpose in any way. They are families that share the similar values because the kids naturally connect more.
Right.
And they've had the hardest time connecting with kids that maybe have a different set of values.
Oh, Duke is downright impatient and a little bit disdainful of what he calls gamers. I know. And what he's meaning by that is not anybody who ever plays a game. It's people who that's all they do.
Yeah. And we're working with his heart and judgmentalism and helping him see there's a lot of good in people, even though they're different. But
and also that if he had a Nintendo Switch, that would be what he wanted to do all the time too.
But he also doesn't have, you know, he had one for a little bit and was thankful when we got rid of it. And he goes, thank you for getting rid of that. It was distracting me. So anyway, that's not everyone's situation. I guess all to say the principle there is don't just let your kids wander from being kids to being teenagers. You got to walk them through it, and you have to be present, and you have to have lots of conversations, to be up so late when you don't want to be, and on and on and on. And it's such a limited amount of time. I'm finding that already. How limited all this is.
And it's so critical amount of time, because pretty soon you're not going to be able to put those boundaries on them at all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you want that open relationship, so they're actually asking your opinion about things.
Yeah.
And you earn that right in the teenage years.
If you're enjoying this content and you want to go deeper, we have an amazing resource that we want to tell you about. It's the Intentional Film Series, Raising Passionate Jesus Followers. Now, this is an incredible tool for you for spiritual formation in the family. And we created this film series to help parents in their God-given task to raise and disciple their own children. Now, our hope is that we're able to help you and give you some of the tools that I know we so desperately need, as we're in the process of raising our kids, and Phil and Diane have actually raised their kids. This is a 9-session film series on the process of what raising a passionate Jesus follower actually looks like. There's some workable solutions in here. There's a bunch of wisdom from the scriptures, and there's a bunch of practical help in your journey as you are raising your children. We cover all sorts of things like parental roles, goals versus values. What is discipline versus punishment? How do I create a heart of obedience in my child where they actually want to obey? What does a heart of self-control look like? Or how do I even help my child in the process of character development? We cover that and so many more things. You can use this film series in a variety of ways. You can use it at your home, preferably with your spouse if that's applicable, with a group of friends or in your community, or even through your local church. All you need to do is head over to our website, intentionalparents.org, click on film series, and then follow the prompts. We have a bunch of other resources there that you can check out, but we do pray that this blesses you in your pursuit of raising passionate Jesus followers.
I just want to add one small thing to this conversation.
Yes.
I'm very proud of both of you as parents because you're doing the hard work.
Me too.
Parenting is hard work.
It is hard work.
And it's you did not want to go out into the garage and give him a loving rebuke, and you didn't handle it perfectly.
No.
But you did handle it perfectly, because when you didn't handle it perfectly, you came back and asked his forgiveness.
Yeah.
So That's good. I just want to say the verse that we teach on this is Proverbs 27:5. Better is open rebuke than love that is concealed. Mm-hmm. Faithful are the wounds of a friend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It would have been easier for you to just say, he's got a bad attitude. He's out in the garage. Let him deal with it. You know, but when one of our kids' bad attitudes is making them miserable and everybody else miserable around them, mm-hmm. a good parent steps in and you tried a gentle correction, and then it didn't carry far enough. But because you did the hard work when your kids were 5, 6, 7, and 8, he was able to listen to you when you brought a loving, and you didn't do it perfect this time, and no parent does it perfect every time. And when you don't do it perfect, you come back and you ask forgiveness for, you didn't say, I'm sorry I gave you a rebuke, Duke. No, you knew he needed a rebuke.
Oh, sure.
And I'm just thinking of all, what a gift you're giving your kids by not just saying, well, you know, I'm just going to give him a gentle correction and hope it'll work out. No, you're actually doing what another verse in the same chapter says, iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another.
Yeah.
You're chipping away. God's molding him. He's a follower of Jesus. God's going to mold him in the image of Jesus, and you're like a tool in God's hands. God's like the chiseler. You know, he's got the hammer, and you're the chisel, and he's using you to help shape your son into what he needs
really
to be.
That's a really good picture.
So all I wanted to say is you gave him a real gift by being willing to go do something he didn't really want to do, but give him the rebuke that he needed, and you didn't do it as, you know, you did it with a little frustration, but then you were godly enough to come back and ask forgiveness. That's amazing. Yeah. I'm just saying I feel bad for so many kids that don't receive that because they're going to receive it later from somebody else, and nobody loves them like you love them.
I was just going to say,
except Jesus himself.
We know all the adults that never got that are getting the rebuke now, are losing jobs all over them. I can't tell you the countless friends I have that
and
are losing
marriages,
jobs.
Losing marriages,
yes,
losing and their kids.
Yeah.
We just looked up the name of a TV producer last night, and just as that typical thing, you know, he's blown through 3 marriages, you know, and multiple kids from multiple relationships.
Yeah.
And I think, whoa, I wonder if he had been well trained as a teenager to, you know, how to deal with all the teenage stuff. if he would have perhaps been able to be a faithful man in other areas of his life. So what the other thing I keep thinking when we're talking about this, how much time this all takes.
That's exactly
in your height of earning power and you're trying to sock away for college and you're just all of that. I mean, just you hear us say it from time to time on here. This may be a season of life where you have to quiet all sorts of other voices and focus on what's most important, and that maybe you'll come back to some of those other things later on. You can't do it all. Nobody can do it all. Different people have different capacities, but during the teenage years, I would say almost like the first few years of a child's life, these are really critical times, and we really want to be present to our kids.
And I would say set things aside, sacrifice things for a season, and have the awareness that it isn't forever; it's for a season. Mm-hmm. Because I do know all that is coming out now on so many levels, but doing a lot of reading and understanding and researching and recognizing how important a present father in the home changes the trajectory of everyone in that home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It is bizarre how much God uses the father figure in the home. Mm-hmm. And this isn't about a wife's role versus a father's role. I'm just saying, God, there is so much practical, real data now of if a dad stays present, relatively kind, keeps his job, doesn't cheat on his wife, doesn't doesn't blow up his life, the trajectory of that family as a whole, wife included, is drastically different.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And so you just start to realize, like, even for you dads who are like, I'm having to lay things down, that's we're all doing that. Like, if you want the second half of your life to not be a miserable mess, take some critical, intentional, sacrificial moments now to really be able to pour into your kids so that they can have the best possible outcome. So we have so many more questions that we did not get to today, but we will get through these. We're going to have a few more of these episodes coming out soon. I know Elizabeth and I didn't even talk to you about this, but I would love to do a couple. There's a couple of you that are asking really strategic questions around chronic illness and kids with special needs and some like ADHD stuff. And so I know that we've had a lot of interaction with these particular topics. So we'll do an episode where we kind of maybe dive into a little bit of that. But I just wanted to let you know, we hear you. We see your questions. We appreciate all of them. Keep them coming. And thank you so much for all of your questions. Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If this podcast has blessed you in any way, here's a few ways that you can partner with us in this ministry. First is to give. Intentional Parents is a nonprofit, and we rely on the generous giving of our partners. So please head over to our website, intentionalparents.org/give, if you would like to become one of our partners through giving. Second is to share it. If this has at all been helpful to you, we encourage you to share it with your friends, your family, and those that you know would be blessed by it. Third is to follow us on social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can find us on Instagram at intentional_parents. And lastly, if you would head over to iTunes, if you enjoyed today's episode, and leave a review on iTunes, this helps us bring more hope, help, and healing for families.